This is Rakadex After Hours.
Good morning, afternoon or evening, everybody. Welcome back to Rack Addicts After Hours. If you tuned in last week, you'll know that we did mention briefly the old the C word, the coronavirus. We're going to have a quick smash through how that's impacting the musical world, and then we'll be slightly less depressing. There have been a few cancellations and postponements. Music Mess has been postponed. Mobile World Congress has gone. But thankfully, those hardcore people in the modular world say that Superbooth will still go on.
Yeah,
at the moment, anyway.
If it was anyone that was going to do it, it's those guys.
The modular, hardcore people,
just apparently. Just whacking the antidote onto some CV cables and just straight in the arm. Yeah. Bang!
Though that is... That's it's 23rd good. Of April, so the scene could very much change. Any other bits that have been cancelled or postponed, Pete?
Not musically, anyway. I've heard of the only one I've heard that was dramatic. I don't know if it was yesterday or today, was the Geneva Motor Show.
Oh, yeah.
Which was quite dramatic because all the exhibitors got all their cars and they had their everything there, and then the Swiss government just said, no, that's not going to happen.
No, thanks. We're not.
Nah.
Not this year. So, yeah, that's all we're going to do on the big old C word because I'm really depressed and scared and terrified. Let's not have any more of that. We've got Andy and Telmo as well as Pete in.
Hey,
guys, how's your week been?
What a week!
Yeah, really? You had a good one?
It's been quite crazy. Catching up with a few assignments at uni, which it's kind of like deadlines are approaching, and I'm like... That's a...
White lines, visions, dreams of passion... Oh, come on,
so
guys,
wait, if we get
that,
a copyright
please.
Strike, does that mean you're an incredible singer?
Maybe. God, Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
I got the
fine.
Reference.
Why did no one jump in then? Anyway, come on.
Continue,
sorry,
Telmo.
Sorry, pal. I had a gig yesterday.
Nice, another P-Gypt one.
Yeah, so we've played at this lovely, lovely place in Epsom. It's called PT the Poe, I believe. So it's basically a well-being centre that turns into a venue a couple of nights in every month, a couple of nights per month. They do this little like jam get-together, and they bring a few local bands over. So me and my P-Gypt fellows, we came down and we did a little session. We headlined the show for about the 20-odd people that were there. It was very nice and chilled.
Oh, that's cute.
Really, really cute. The space is lovely. I totally recommend if you need a place to kind of like, if you want to, you know, they have a gym in there as well. If you want to just, you know, talk to people about well-being, about yoga.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool. Really cool.
Leverage some ambient modular stuff there, see what they think about it.
You should totally get involved,
delicious.
Honestly. Great. We did a little set. I also want to thank to James Gillis for dropping in for to play drums for us, and obviously Alex Hancock, our bass player, and also a promoter of the event. It was a lovely, lovely event. We've got some really cool videos coming out. It was all recorded also in 4K, so we will be getting a few videos as well up on YouTube soon.
Oh, nice.
Of some filthy jazz, I hope.
Filthy jazz. What does filthy jazz sound like?
Wait and see.
Brace yourself.
Andy Rue, how's it going? You told me earlier you were shopping for microphones.
Oh, yeah.
For LStudio.
Yeah, so we're going through the expansion at the moment. It's all gone pretty manic. Basically, we thought it was going to start on Monday, and it didn't start on Monday. So it started on Tuesday. And I was really, like, just all of a sudden, it's like... what do you call this stuff? Just I'm looking it up, like
eaves, roofing.
Yeah, the roofing kind of part of it. That came up.
Oh, what for your
the live room,
the
right?
Live room bit.
And
nice.
Then the next time I went in there, the actual platting there had been put in, or whatever you want to call it, had been put in. The funniest anecdote that I have is the guy that owns a studio. So there are two parts of that room that's being built. One part is going to be offices, the other part is going to be the live room. And the guy that came in, me and Kieran were having a look around. He's like, right, this is like, this roofing's really, really strong. Like, have a look at this. So he goes up and grabs the two of it to do a pull up. He pulls down, and then the yeah. The roof just comes down because they haven't sealed it into the concrete. So that just happens. So we look at him, it's like, I've never seen him go red in the face before.
There we go.
But that just happened.
And so he's got to fix it.
No, but the two guys that were building it, all of a sudden they just rush over, and then all he hears and it just goes in. He's like, nah, come over, have a look at this. So he goes to the other part of the roof, and yeah, he does hang off it, and it's like, okay, it is deceptively strong. But just like watching that, just kind of watching the builders in the background just shaking their heads. It's
brilliant.
Like,
yeah.
You know what we're dealing with. But yeah, that's probably the big news. So the live room's going to be pretty huge, which means we need to expand on our microphones. So having a look into some of the options that we have, some names that are floating about.
Lots of warm audio love, you said.
Lots of warm audio love, yeah. I'm quite a big fan of those guys and everything that they're doing. The guys that work there are super nice as well. And
have you used, one of the ones you mentioned was the WA84. Have you used the Neumann, the real deal? I mean, real deal, inverted commas.
The WA47 is the one that we're after. Mm. And no, I haven't had a chance to
really want to know that comparison.
Real 47. Yeah. Oh my gosh. In fact, funnily enough, I think, if I remember correctly, don't quote me on this, a fellow that we used to work with named Jake.
From Metropolis.
He works up at Metropolis now. He built a
U47 Junior?
Clone?
Either way, yeah, built a clone for his...
And apparently it was literally... like for like.
Well, no, it went to a bunch of the big bods in Metropolis just for them to try. Right? And didn't you borrow it?
I didn't. No, I still need to bother him with that. I keep meaning to bother Jake about a lot
of
things.
Actually, I've messaged him a couple of times trying to get him down for this podcast so we can talk to him.
Oh, dude, yeah.
He's going to be...
Is he up for coming down?
Yeah, but he's super busy.
They work him like a dog there, man. The last time I saw him, I think I've looked tired before. But that poor guy, like...
Between that and I think his other thing is fishing. Yeah. He's going to be a tired man. But we'll get him here one day because he's going to be a super interesting
People
guy.
People deserve it. People deserve it.
Yeah, they should. Jake's a real interesting guy.
Jake Ellsgood, I'm going to send you this episode just to let you know that Andy, Telmo, Pete and I, we need you.
Yeah.
We need you here. We need your voice in our ears.
And you did look beautiful even though I said you looked tired. So
there you go. Andy's apology is in.
Yeah.
Pete, how have you been? You've not had the best week as far as I know.
No, it's been up and down, but we don't have to go into some of the downs.
Graphic details.
Or any of that at the moment. Monday, my Zen delay turned up, it went straight back.
Oh no! Tell us, happened? What went up?
Got it out of the box, all looks fine, got it all wired up, it all seemed to be working. Then I suddenly realised the bypass button just didn't work, it was just permanently on.
Oh no,
lame. So, and I had to have a bit of a sanity check, and the manual was, sparse would be an under...
Yep.
There was just nothing on it, so I ended up watching videos and closely scrutinising the people and saying, "Does that, you know, am I getting this wrong?" But no, it didn't work. So it literally, I was on the phone within half an hour of receiving it, and they sent me an RMA, and I returned it straight away.
Are they just going to get you a fresh one, or are they all out of stock already?
I was initially going to go for a replacement, and then I thought, no, I've kind of lost faith in the product. For such a relatively small manufacturer, you hope to think they managed their quality control a bit better than they, because it was a very distinct problem.
Did it sound good?
Yeah, it worked. It did sound quite good, but I, you know, it was a very expensive delay. Yeah. I mean, it was best part of £500.
Yeah.
So I just thought, I'll go for the refund.
Yeah,
fair enough.
To be honest. Fair enough. You've got to try it out.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
But so other than that, we've got some news.
Oh, we do.
Interesting. Your plea that went out. Wait. Your plea for...
Whoa, no way, no way.
So your plea for information on the Datanon System 3000.
Yes.
So Datanon reached out to us.
What?
So Datanon...
No way.
People actually listen to this, man.
How on earth did... What? Okay, fill me in. I'm so excited.
So Jackie from Datanon reached out to me. Said they were aware it come up, and they'd found it through Facebook, or you know, because I believe Jackie is their sort of main focus for social media. So And they basically said that they've got a book for us, which in fact is on the way. It's the most probably the book that you're talking about. So it's the book is called The Early Days of Synth.
I'm so excited. Oh, whoa. Well,
I get that right. The Early Synth Days, rather.
The Early Synth Days. Oh, man.
So that's
so what did he say?
Dayton on you, absolute heroes.
So that's winging its way via UPS, I believe they were saying it was coming.
Whoa! Oh, this is the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me. Oh, my God.
So as soon as that, I'll place that book in your hands. As you were the instigator of that inquiry.
Nobody can see how excited I am on the internet, but trust me, this is incredible.
Yeah, and I was quite taken aback because, I mean, this podcast is relatively new. And
but we're on three,
this is episode 14.
14, there we go. 14 weeks.
That's a good number, isn't
it? Wait, did we miss one? Miss a week?
No.
It's going well.
Yes. But to get that sort of, you know, that kind of response. I know that's what the internet does. But, I just thought,
that is
wow.
Cool, though.
In fact, in my response to them, I just said, you know,
wow.
This is literally what I said. That I was quite impressed by, you know. So I knew you'd be pleased about that.
Oh, yeah, that's so cool. Oh, my God, amazing. Oh, I can't wait
I'd expect to hopefully get that next week. So
amazing. If we can feed back on the next podcast what the exciting stuff that we've learned about some obscure old
little
module format.
Can we share it like the Necronomicon?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We can all engage in some dark magic, I imagine. That'd be pretty cool.
As soon as I've got it, hold it, I'll have a quick browse for it, and then I'll give it to you. So I've got no anticipation, because I believe that's what sponsored your initial...
It was Tom Whitwell from Music Thing Modular, I think, put it on his Instagram story.
Was that the book?
That's how I saw it. I think it was the book, yeah.
Yes, so it's that book.
Yeah, because he's a big old nerd for the kind of obscure and old electronics manuals and companies. And I've learned a lot of interesting stuff via his social media, so... Thank you, Tom. Thank you. So it is Datanon, isn't it?
Yeah.
Datanon. Yeah.
Are they somewhere in Scandinavia?
I don't know. To the internet we go, as always. Because I remember when I was doing my Googling, there was a very small amount that I could actually find out just in terms of looking for manuals or that kind of stuff. Is it Datanon?
Yes.
We've been mispronouncing it all day.
Yeah, so the end of their URL is SE. So what country is SE?
Is that Sweden?
Yeah, I'm thinking. That's what I had.
I feel like that's the easy answer.
What's the web address?
It is literally www.datanon.se.
Data and then N-O-N?
Yes.
Dot S-E. Let's have a gander.
No, it's... I got that right. Yeah, T-O-N. So data, T-O-N.
Oh, Dataton, not Datanon.
Yeah,
okay,
Dataton.
Dataton. Here we go. Dot S-E. Yeah.
That is Sweden, by the way. Dot
it is
S-E.
Sweden.
It is
Sweden.
Oh,
we got it right.
It's the Swedish domain.
Lovely stuff. Yeah, we had a quick word about them. Oh, I love it. Oh, man. Great.
Thank you so much.
That's the...
brilliant.
Is that the Pete Week roundup? Or was the Pete, you're done with your week?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, cool. That's all I've got.
Nice one. I mean, I think the only other thing that I had was... we did have an episode where I ranted about the OPZ, didn't we?
Yes.
Well, it's gone now. I don't own it, and
You sold it?
Yeah, I sold it, and I've purchased a...
I might have been interested in that.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Andy. I got a... I bought a Digitact from one of our friends at the ModCaf.
Oh,
I should have bought it in the first place. What an idiot.
Dude,
I am. It's delicious.
That Electron stuff is so, hard to work out. Like,
I mean,
without...
You've got to rewire your brain a little bit first.
This is the thing. I've never had a chance to actually sit down with it. But every time I've looked at it, it reminds me of, have you guys ever played Fallout?
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of looks like I'm a synthesizer that would have been built in Fallout.
Mm.
And it's kind of looks...
They're a little bit industrial, but they're all used...
I love it. I love the aesthetic. Yeah. And once I got to sit down with one for about half an hour, and what I could get out of it, I really enjoyed.
They are
but
really
I've just,
fun.
Other than that, I've had people come over and say, what's that? And I'm like, I don't know, to be honest.
There's a really interesting kind of... design feel with them, because I mean, just in terms of the looks, there's a certain industrialness to them. They all do have this kind of, they share a family language, and once you've figured that out, maybe using a Digitact or a Digitone, you can kind of figure out most of them. The Octatrack's a bit of a weird one, but they're so powerful, and I enjoy the workflow. I know you've had some frustrations with some of the deeper workings of them, Pete.
Yeah, when you really want to get deep, you know, right to the sort of bottom layers of its capability. It's what I tend to find is that my short-term memory is really bad. So, you know, I get it all sort of going and I leave it for a little bit and come back to it and go, how do you...
Oh, yeah.
How do you move a sample to a different location? And all? I mean, there is a lot sort of... There's a fair bit of menu diving.
Yeah.
But that's inherent in the their design ethic, I suppose.
Yeah. And I like the way it's laid out. It feels to me... Because I had borrowed one from work. Actually, I took it to Australia. I didn't tell anyone. But there we go. but yeah, so I've lived with one for a bit. But it feels like one of those instruments that you can really, really dig into and use for a really long time, keep discovering new stuff.
Yeah.
But then once you've been using it a lot, you end up getting really fast with it. You know all the tricks. So I'm kind of excited to, as Pete has done, really go to the ultra nitty gritty with it. And
yeah, to a degree. I mean, there is a point where you realize you have actually hit the buffers and there is no more capability. You know, I'm searching for the capability, and it's limited to a degree, because the features that you would possibly want that extend from there would be in the larger, more expensive product.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so forth.
See, that's a really weird one, because in my world I'm so used to dealing with things like equalizers or compressors and things like that, where it's like you theoretically you know what the limit of it's going to be, like, if you pardon the pun.
Yeah.
Like, you know what the limit of it's going to be, so you utilize that tool in the way that you think that is appropriate to the job that it's doing. I've never really come across too much that's, you know, that you push it so far that you do start to, in a creative sense, that you do start to see the buffers of what is kind of, it is capable of and what it isn't capable of. Usually for me it's like, okay, I'll move on to the next tool that I've got, and I'm sure in some ways it's a relatively similar process, but just from that more creative side of things,
I suppose
I think it's cool.
Mainly in the areas it doesn't have a song mode and it doesn't have conventional pattern chaining, and you can do it, but
you can't save them.
It's in the moment, and I think that's how they've designed it to be very much a live mm-hmm. kind of
So you need to be very proficient with the interface to be able to
reasonably
get it on the live.
If you want to use it
well.
Live, you'll probably have pre-prepared all your sequences and
okay.
your sample sets and things. But if you're designing a sequence, it's not the most jammable thing.
It's not.
In
it's
the
not.
World,
I've played a bit for a while with it, and it just blew my mind. It's not only for the functionalities. But it's just the way it's the interface is so different than anything else that I've ever played with.
So if you just want to use your 8 tracks and make a drum beat, easy, you can do that, no problem. But if you want to use all the,
you can do that with all other stuff.
Exactly, so, like trig conditions and all the sort of changing sample per step. That
it's
kind
about
of
digging
stuff,
in, right? Yeah,
that's not really doable live,
unless
you're really quick.
I really like the idea of some of these pieces of equipment that it is something that you want to like purchase and then print off the manual, or you get the manual and then you bury yourself in with it, and then that's your like next couple of days, as opposed to like some of the other ones which are like kind of more instantly accessible. I just think it, like for me, like what you're saying, like the Digitech is designed to be like or not designed to be, but is kind of cool as a live instrument. I think you've got to have like be pretty brave to use something like that on the surface of it, because if it were me, if something was going to go wrong, I'd like to know pretty quick how to fix it.
Absolutely.
That's why I quite like, if you can find an instrument that has the, or something that you can totally ignore the manual of and just blag it and be surprised by what it does.
Yeah, see, it's like
without getting lost. That's quite a difficult
like
thing to find.
The Juno stuff, I always found that to be really easy to
Roland,
the old Juno stuff, like, because they do the boutique version.
Because it's just sliders.
It's just sliders. It's super easy. Or the SH-101, I pick that up pretty quickly and I kind of get halfway to getting what I need to get.
It's direct control.
That's the only thing that I don't really like about the DeepMind, is that it seems like more complicated than
it isn't. It's not once you just have to get the hang of the fact that you can sort of tap into each section with the edit button, and then it displays
then it
on the menu.
I think it's when you turn the tables from the sound to the visualization. The screen always brings a different element to what you're doing. If you're playing with a DeepMind, you have to be aware that you know, you look at the screen and you're like, damn, okay, now I get it what I'm doing in a different way.
Yeah.
You see
that's
I mean?
The thing. I got to sit down with one the other day, and I was like, oh, okay, right, I'm starting to get it now. Okay.
I couldn't go any further. Like, I've got my my reface, the CS,
isn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's a cool thing.
It's brilliant. It's just sliders.
What you see is what you get.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that element of
and the looper function is brilliant as well.
Yeah, I like equipment. Like, typically, maybe it's because I'm a bit of a gorilla, but for me, seriously, I like chimp grade equipment where you don't really have to.
I like that chimp grade.
Yeah, chimp grade. That's me. But it's like even like really nice things like the Mazalek and stuff like that. Yeah. It's just an EQ. It's just right. EQ.
It's an honest EQ.
It's just it's what it is. You turn it up. You turn it down.
I think that's one of the interesting things about our job actually is if somebody comes in and is like, oh, can you show me the Octatrack or can you show me how to use the Waldorf Quantum? Mm. You really get to know because there's so many products we have to be able to figure out. There's no way. You can actually know how to use all of these things. Yeah. So you get to know how blaggable they are. Mm. something like the Octatrack, I know what it can do. I have absolutely no idea how to do it. Yeah. But something like the Quantum, it's got a reasonably well-designed interface, so you can just read the thing, go, here's the stuff, press the button, it comes up on the screen. Hooray, touchscreen, nice, go.
I think it's what a lot of things boils down to is just having the vague understanding of the foundations of what makes this piece of equipment what it is. Once you've got that down, you can typically translate it from one thing to the other. Like the Electron stuff, I can't remember which one I played, but it was a synth, kind of thing.
Digitone, probably.
It's probably the Digitone, yeah. And it was like, oh, okay, right, I get what that means. I know what that means. Oh, fine, I can't work out which knob gets it to bloody do the thing that I need it to do. But I know what I'm kind of getting at, and I then know how to warp the sound in the way that I want it to. But it's the same with anything. So like once you've sussed out what gain reduction is on a compressor and
et cetera, you just
kind of get it, and then you can hop on to the next one.
Small bits of knowledge that can really amplify your
understanding. And it opens you up to using new things.
Have you ever had a bit of studio outboard that you've struggled to use? What kind of thing is it? What's it tend to be? Is it just weird labeling or menus?
Patch bays are one. I hate patch bays.
If they're designed by a good human, then they probably make sense.
I don't know.
Wait, is Kieran major patch bays?
No, we don't use patch bays.
Oh, fair enough.
I think we might have to start using patch bays.
Virtual patch bay on Antelope Goliath.
Yeah,
that's
not talking
the stuff
about that.
Of nightmares.
Yeah, let's not
it
talk
is.
About that.
It is.
Well, actually, I get it, but...
I get it now because you explained it to me.
Yeah, I know. But I had to figure it out.
You had the headache first.
Studio gear that really... Yes, there was one. I've never actually used a real one, but I've used the plug-in version of it, and it's the Shadow Hills compressor.
Ugh.
I look at that thing, and I still have absolutely no idea what it does. No clue.
It's very slow. I've used it and got results, but it's so slow, because you've got to read it and go, oh, wait.
I tell you what.
Oh, that's what it is.
I used it and got results, because I used a preset.
How dare you?
And it sounded
insulted.
I love
Pete
presets.
Got a thing to say.
Yes, well, I was just going to say that. I mean, the Electron, the interface with the 8 or 6 rotary encoders, which is that design, it's pretty old. I mean, I had a machine drum a good 10 years ago, and that was a second-hand one. But I've just quickly looked. The machine drum came out in 2001.
Oh.
So we're nearly 19 years old.
Yeah. They started it, stuck with it, and it's great. I love it.
They had a predecessor, which is called the SID station. That was 1998.
Completely different interface, though. That had a keypad on it.
Yeah.
This would be such a good idea. Like, I said to you guys at the start, like both you and Ben and obviously Tomo, it's like getting involved. Like, for a lot of this stuff, I'm just going to be here to listen and then ask the stupid questions. Like doing something like that with, like, if we could sit down and do that with like a video or something like that, if you get like the Electron out and just like chimp grade tutorials where you like show me how to do these things.
Yeah. Well, actually, one thing that Pete and I have been cooking up is on Monday we're going to get some testing on this. You know, this actually happens a lot in the shop. You just go, I just want to know how to do the thing.
Yeah.
You're fishing through a manual and you're doing a control F or a command F and going oscillator tune or oscillator sync, trying to find this one thing. we're going to hopefully get some videos going where, you, let's say, using the Digitact, you go, how on earth do I chain two patterns together? Yeah. So you go on YouTube and you go, Digitact, chain pattern. And this video comes up. And then it will be a 20-minute video of some guy going, oh, hey there, man. Oh, so you should remember to like and subscribe. Yeah. And welcome to this one channel. And today we're going to look at the Electron Digitact. Yeah. And I've been... And you just... Yeah, you hate it. And you skip through and you miss the thing.
See, this is the thing. Well, yeah. I get that. And I totally think what you're doing is a good idea.
We're going to try and make one-minute video that will just show you how to do it. You just... It's really easy to search.
But
super quick.
I'm telling you, man. Like a chimp-grade tutorial.
Oh,
like,
my God, Chimp Grade, that's trademark.
With me.
Rack Addict.
Yeah, you
let's do this.
It here first.
Rack Addict After Hours. You have now seen the conception of Chimp Grade.
Yeah, just do that. It's like, under, like if you were just there, like, as long as you're in the, what is it, like, homo family or something. Oh, that sounds
fair
like,
enough. Yeah. Do you think that's going to come across a bit derogatory or something? Are they going to interpret
what, Chimp Grade?
Yeah.
You're an idiot. Here's how to use this thing, you idiot. Yeah. That's not what
no,
we're
doing. No, I was trying to think like what the
no question is a stupid question. If you don't know, you don't
know. I'm never afraid of looking like an idiot.
No.
Like, 100%. I'd rather look like an idiot and know so that I can show the next person how to actually do it. Because the worst thing you can ever do is lie.
Yeah.
No, I tend to fess up straight away if a customer comes up and asks me and say, can you show me? I go, I know nothing about it.
Yeah. Let's find out together. That's the fun attitude that we got.
Yeah, maybe that would be like the Teletubbies version of it. Let's find out together tutorial.
It's like it's the same with me with Kemper. You know, ask me about Helix. That's fine. Ask me about Headrush. I'll be there. Put a Kemper in front of me. I'll just go like, you know what? Nah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Reinforcements, please.
Yeah. Well, that is literally it. It's like whenever I get a thing about synthesizers or joke about it, it's like, oh, synth nerds assemble, and it's just an email for you or Pete. Just like, can you please just answer this question for me?
That's what we
do.
Well,
some of the questions are pretty obscure. I mean, a lot of times it's people moaning about the functionality, which is inherently part of how it functions, but they think it's broken.
I don't mean that. It's just like when you go down into like the most like amazing detail. Like, you know, when we talk about like that foundation understanding of things, you've got to have like over... You've got to have the next there. You've got to have the insulation level understanding.
Have a good, solid understanding of the principles of synthesis.
Yeah, right.
And all the different types of synthesis.
Absolutely. There was a dude who returned a Behringer Odyssey to us because...
Did it get B-stopped?
No, it had to be repaired because one of the filters didn't work. But the rest of his complaint was it made no sound whatsoever, just made a washing noise or something. And it's just because he didn't know how this
works.
We've
all been there with the ARP.
Yeah.
It's
weird. You know the thing that I don't get about the ARP, though, is like, why do the colours on the LEDs matter?
Is there a scientific reason? First batch was all white. Now they look like a Christmas tree.
I liked it when it was like that. I preferred it. Like
ironically, I had a customer recently inquiring about the white light ones.
Yeah,
there we go.
Oh, they're all coloured now.
We can't win.
There is no winning that sort of thing. I mean, if the original didn't have lighting up sliders, it just had little.
Yeah, you just be thankful for what you've got. Exactly. Well, that's what Roland said about the four voice Juno. The boutique.
Oh, well, they said like
they no, literally, this is directly from the Roland synth expert in the UK. His mouth. He said the Roland dudes in Japan who make the things. When responding to the complaints about why it's four voice rather than six, they said, please be happy with what you have. Because it would have, like, doubled the price to put an extra chip in it, but, you know.
Yeah.
Is it that hard to increase the polyphony of something that's been emulated in a piece of software?
Well, apparently, to do it to their standards, they would have needed more power.
Maybe
more
processing. Yeah, so I can see maybe more processing power would be required. Yeah.
They could have conceivably compromised the sound quality standards to do it, but I don't think they wanted to do that.
So,
I mean, I respect them for sticking to their guns.
Yeah, fair enough. And they want it to be a very good approximation of the original, as it's synthetic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they sound great. Yeah, all that.
Can't go wrong.
Where were we? Because we were just kind of rambling, and here we are. Welcome to whatever the section of this conversation we've got. Ooh, there was that segment that we've introduced recently. Who's heard some new cool tunes? Anybody? Because, I mean, I'm throwing that one out there, and all I've got is... I'm into my progressive metal, so tune out if you want, but...
What is progressive metal?
So, think Metallica, you know, the classic. That's what I call a classic metal sound. Make the drums a lot more punchy and aggressive, and then a lot of the time you introduce... it's sort of a genre, it's sort of a sound called djent.
Djent?
So gent is an onomatopoeia because the guitars kind of sound like gent, gent, that kind of thing. They're really gated, really sharp, really percussive. And a lot of progressive metal has that characteristic as well as being really melodic and strange time signatures and all this kind of stuff.
It evolved from bands like Rush. I don't know if you...
I'm very familiar with Rush.
There we go.
So it's a lot of metal bands who really liked their prog rock kind of stuff.
Yeah. Dream Theater.
Yep, Dream Theater was one of the earlier bands to go progressive metal. But then the modern thing is a lot of... it's kind of harsh vocals, screamy type stuff. But one of the big bands in that scene is Periphery. The lead singer, Spencer Sotelo, has a side project called Nick Mystery, which is an 80s-style pop-ish thing. They've got two particular tunes which are released as singles, Hanging by a... it's just By a Thread and Maniac. Two really good tunes, big old punchy drums, lots of synths. If you don't like 80s synth pop type stuff, then it's not going to be for you, but I reckon those are some really good tunes. Lots of big kind of gated style reverbs on the snares. I think that they're just great songs, great lyrics.
I'm always slightly surprised that these metal or heavy metal bands, when they're doing the screaming, they're not spitting their literally spitting their tonsils all over the mic.
Yeah, well, it's not something.
How do you do that without damaging yourself?
Yeah, it's not something that I personally understand. One of our colleagues, Sam, does metal vocals. Yeah.
Is there a special technique? Or
there is. Yeah. So vocal fry, as far as I'm aware, is if you. You get those Californian girls that go, oh my god, you know how Nada sounds. So that kind of noise,
give us an example, Nada.
It kind of sounds like the death moan on The Grudge.
There we go.
Oh my god, I love that movie.
That's the noise. So that's vocal fry. You give that a lot of... Man, it's just...
Let's stop.
I think Nada just did it. But you give that a lot more pressure from the diaphragm and you basically get what's called a fry scream, which is actually really quiet. But using clever compression, you can get it to same kind of volume.
They're using sort of mic techniques and hardware to really amplify.
Absolutely. And if you do
it up for an hour and a half or whatever.
Well, yeah, if you don't actually have a lot of tension in the vocal cords, it's perfectly sustainable.
So you don't end up with...
just destroying yourself.
Yeah, destroying your vocal cords, like nodes on your vocal cords or whatever.
The less talented or experienced vocalists will just yell and blow out their voice in one show when they're on tour. But the people like Devin Townsend, he can have the flu and still do his thing. He's really got it down.
He's a mage.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
I've seen him live as well, Guy. He's incredible. I've shaken his hand. This was not when he had the flu, I think.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, so if you do it right, it's very sustainable. But most people don't. Because it sounds so angry. Most people want to, tense up and kind of do all that kind of thing. But it's the opposite. You've got to relax.
Okay, so because it does come across as being very aggressive, doesn't it? It's sort of,
absolutely.
Sort of scream from hell.
Yeah. About the screaming.
What?
Can I say something about
the screaming? Far away.
I know a few people that do that in their bands, and they do it live and stuff, and they've always said the same thing. It's actually not loud. Mm-hmm. Okay, you have to like really have your sound guy just push the gain as far as it can go when it's time for them to do the screaming. Otherwise, you will 100% blow your voice out.
Absolutely.
It requires a lot of technique.
Yeah, it's just like being a good singer. You've got to be a good screamer. Practice.
Who originated? When did it really surface?
Because question.
My idea of metal, or it was like rock, and then it became heavy rock, and then it became metal, and then you have all these weird sort of.
I would say like
diverging
mid-90s
sort of genres of metal.
Yeah. Mid-90s. Well,
we've got a bit more of a metalhead with us today. Another colleague from our particular shop, Guy. What are you thinking? What's your? Have you got a date on that one?
Origin
do you reckon?
Of fry
there we go. Origin of Fry screams. Guy's on the mic now. He's just been handed a headset. What do you reckon?
Origin of Fry screaming is probably about 1986.
Who do you reckon? Bands names.
So like Slayer and Death.
Yeah.
Quite early, because Death started in 86, 88.
Yeah, and then obviously it's going to diverge. New techniques are going to kind of come around.
Devin Townsend, as you said, brought in a lot more operatic techniques and classically trained techniques into that.
Yeah, well, you say classically trained. He's got no idea what he's doing. He admits it himself.
But, yeah.
Then there's a lot of people that say, I think false chord is a thing that people use for the really... the guttural kind of things, which is
pushing from the diaphragm, trying to get that extra like low note, and also using the undertone.
There's some weird flappy bits somewhere in your throat that aren't really supposed to make noise, but you can make them.
You can manipulate them to do what you want them to do.
Exactly, yeah. And you can get some pretty horrifying noises.
Yeah, really good ones for that. Jens Kidman of Meshuggah.
Oh yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Jens Kidman of Meshuggah is very good for that. Of maintaining the really guttural low notes.
Yeah, so Meshuggah being another one of the big bands on the modern progressive metal scene.
Well, they started in early 90s with Contradiction's Collapse.
Mm. That's where actually Jen kind of came from, one of those bands.
Because they started as a Metallica cover band originally, and then they started employing 7 and 8 strings just to kind of get that.
Low tunings, that's the thing I forgot to mention about those.
So I have absolutely no idea who any of these bands you're talking about are.
Well, we're being educated.
Yeah, that's obviously of a different generation.
I mean, Meshuggah started in early 90s, originally playing Metallica style riffs, and they realised the amount of gain and the lack of mids that they were using.
Oh, yeah. Then they went the opposite, just put all the mids in.
They realised that the extreme amount of saturation and gain and lack of mid-range that they were using was not conducive to clarity. It wasn't that too much of a problem in E-standard, but when they were starting to employ 7 strings and then they started tuning down to like F-sharp, so nearly an octave below, it just became mud. So that's when they started employing a lot more mid-range and a lot less gain, and also the introduction of either signal boosting or clean boost.
Yeah, noise gates as well.
Noise gates and clean boost. The key part is the clean boost.
Bit of a tangent, which started at actually kind of an 80s pop kind of thing. But that's what I've been listening to. Nick Mystery started from, you know, the Periphery lead singer. Who else has got some tunes they've been checking out? Tell me.
So I've been listening. This is following what we've talked about last week about Tim Impala's new album, The Slow Rush.
Yes, yes.
So I give it a bit more time this week. And as I said to Andy earlier on, it's starting to grow on me. However, it's still that sort of album that I still think that it's not as good as their previous stuff. It's still great. Tim Impala's there. There's plenty of great songs. There's plenty of great grooves. However, it's a strong 3.5 out of 5 kind of thing.
So still not really hitting home
just,
with
just
you.
Because it doesn't... well, it hits me. It hits me on the nostalgia side. But it doesn't really give me anything back, as in, they're doing, this is what else we're going to give you. No, it's just the same old Tim Impala, and there's nothing wrong with that, and it's great. Apart from that, I've been listening to some Marcus King.
Who's that?
Well, that is a brilliant, brilliant blues player. He's quite young. I think he's in his mid-20s now. He originally grew up adoring the Allman Brothers Band, ended up in jazz school, learn all the jazz.
All of the jazz. He learned all of the jazz chops.
He's just an incredible player for any guitar players that are listening to this podcast. Mm. If you don't know him, you have to listen to him, get his chops down.
What's the name again? I've instantly forgotten.
So his name is Marcus King. New album is called El Dorado, which is produced by Dan Auerbach of the Black
You know what? I've just
Black
had
Keys.
A good idea. Oh, that's sick. You know what? I've just had a good idea is why don't we make a Spotify playlist?
Yeah.
Genius.
Brilliant.
The stuff that we're mentioning now.
Pete, do you have Spotify?
Yes, only the free version.
Cool, I'll do it. I've got premium Spotify, so I'll sort that all out.
Yeah, Brilliant. Yeah, that would be a real
Let's
good
do it.
Idea.
Well, you guys keep chatting. I'm going to set that up because I will forget if I don't do
Brilliant.
It now.
Yeah.
We'll add to it every week.
I just think it's just a brilliantly produced album as well from Dan Auerbach's side.
He's amazing, from the stuff. And then I guess maybe it was mixed by Chad Blake?
Probably. I did not check that.
Real cool. Chad Blake is
They've
amazing.
Been working together for a while.
I know
they?
That the Black Keys and Chad Blake worked together on most of their things. And it's like, without realizing it, this guy's done the mixes for half of my favorite albums.
Yeah, it's all Fantasy Records. Ever. So it's brilliant stuff.
Is that Dan's label?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. is I I was watching the Black Gears on the Joe Rogan podcast, and that was really, they were real cool, really cool guys. And they talked a little bit more about it. They do have vision. That's really cool.
It works well.
Yeah. They seem like they'd just do anything once, because why not? Like, yeah. Let's just see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a really cool way of going about things.
The first time for me that I saw that Dan Auerbach was really doing something different out there when I first listened to that Lana Del Rey album. I think it was Born to Die.
He worked on that?
He worked on that as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's a cool record.
That's great. Great record. It's just like saturated tape.
Oh,
really,
it's so
old
nice
school.
It's real old school, like, yeah. Like glamorous kind of I don't even know how I could describe
late 60s
kind of 70s thing. Yeah,
because the drums kind of like takes me to kind of like this early Fleetwood Mac.
It was definitely a throwback.
Yeah,
that's
definitely the
Telma, give us a couple of tunes from that new Marcus King album. I'll stick those on the newly created Rack Addicts After Hours playlist. Find it on Spotify.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, listen
from
to...
From El Dorado, is that the way
From
you
El Dorado, yep. Yes. Listen to The Well.
The Well, lovely stuff. That's there.
And Beautiful Stranger.
Oh, I'm there.
Have you got any shout-out tracks from the Tame Impala record that people should be listening to?
So, Lost in Yesterday.
Lost in Yesterday.
Lost in Yesterday. Mm-hmm. Not only because it's one of the, I think it was the first single coming out of the album. Not only is just, it's a tune, just without a doubt. It just works great. One that I've mentioned as well last week is Posthumous Forgiveness, which takes me to that sort of like, 'cause I'm a Man vibes of the previous album. So those are my top two tracks. Breathe Deeper as well is a pretty good one. If you wanna go in deeper.
It's a bit of a bop, that one.
Lovely stuff. It's nice on the Rack Addicts After Hours playlist. I'm just going to make sure that's all public and all that kind of stuff. Before, make collaborative. Hooray!
Before we call it a day as well, I just wanted to mention a lovely event that I'm involved in at Brunel University. So it's an event that's happening on the 20th of March. So if you're around Uxbridge at that date in particular, so me and my course mates, we're doing an event for charity. Charity is Nordoff Robbins. It's a music therapy charity, and it's been doing an amazing job by helping children and seniors with like overcoming their disabilities with music. So they're doing a brilliant job. We're paying a tribute and an homage to what they're doing by providing more live music as well with well-being. So there's going to be a yoga class with live music happening at the same time. So this is meditation, improvisation, music going on. There will be different traditional instruments like Lithuanian kanglas. Beg your pardon if I'm not saying it correctly. That sort of stuff is quite interesting. If you're out and about, do show up.
Where can you find that online?
Well, they can find it at the event in Shine Music Brunel Music Festival. So that's the event on Facebook. You can search for that on your Facebook search bar, and it will come up. If you guys have any questions, do get in touch with us. We will provide free entry, and there will be a few drinks as well. If you want to support the charity, there will be a little stall there with information, and there will be also free cakes and free snacks. So
free cakes and snacks. Lovely stuff. Thank you very much, Telmo, and thank you everybody to listening to this episode of Rack Addicts After Hours. With the whole coronavirus thing going about, wash your hands, get some good hand sanitizer, never shake anyone's hand. Stay safe. See you next time.